If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hello. Lucky I could be here this evening to join you fine people to speak of weird things.
Precisely. The other voice you're about to hear is Mr. Justin Robert Young.
The French champagne.
Have you heard the William Shatner talking to the radio announcer guide that just came out? I mean, it's been out for a while, but I just heard it for the first time.
You just reminded me because you sent that to me and I started playing it, but I was in line at Target and then I stopped playing it and I never got back to it.
So he does a read and then the guy says, can we do it like a little more energy? And Shatner's like, okay, more energy, and does it again. And the guy's like, yeah, maybe a little different. And Shatner's like, well, how would you like me to read it? He's like, well, it says, no, why don't you read it so I'll know how to read it? And this guy's like, no. And he's like, no, I insist, read it. You're right. You know, let me do it. And he just makes the guy read it. And then he does like a pitch perfect, like not imitating his voice, but hits the guy's pitch and speed exactly as he does it back.
Like ultimate, then, consummate professional.
Guy's like, how is that? And the guy's like, well, no. And it starts cringing because, you know, it's not. You know, one guy's the voice talent.
Ultimate douchebag professional.
It was. You always want to be mindful when you work with people who do that for a living. How to ask for things.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that there is a line of certain decorum that you have to have as a director too. You know, it's not. I mean, obviously, it's easy to just dump on Shatner because we know, you know, more of Shatner and we have a preconceived notion of who the Shatner is. But I mean, there is definitely an element to handle egos. That's part of the director's job.
Yeah. Well, this is very amusing because Shatner is just he just drills into the guy just by insisting, like, no, we will do it the way you want it. You know, we will do it the way you want it, exactly how you want it. Tell me how you want it, and then yeah, it's worth listening to. So, let's do a little startup right here with a detective case.
Whoa! Thank goodness, okay. I'm ready
to
solve
the perfect crime.
What kind of? Listen, you want those old hacks, Spiro and the Fudge?
Don't force it, Brian.
I'm just saying. There's a new team in town.
Whoa! Who's the new team? Is this the spinoff?
It's Gary and the Weasel.
Gary and the Weasel.
What?
They're available. We also have Lilo and the Banana. We've got the Server and Firestorm. They're all available.
And Brian's about ready to go. The Router and the Beer Bottle.
It's like I'm looking around. It's like Wayne's World. I'm like, there's
The Hemorrhoid Cream and the yes. Speed.
There's the John Microphone and Herb Modernerstein.
There's the empty pint glass and the keys. They're ready there for you. So who's it going to be?
Gentlemen, you choose.
All right.
So I need to know. Just knock on the door. I'm going to give you your case.
What was your first one? Gary and the Weasel?
Sure. Yes.
All right. Well, you're Gary.
Obviously, I'm the Weasel.
Gary's like a passive-aggressive guy. You know, he was like a former shop teacher,
magician.
Decided to become a police officer.
Yes, former shop teacher. Very fastidious. Very
has no trigger finger from a shop accident.
Very insistent.
Oh, so that's like the big thing. Is like he's like, oh, like Gary, here's the gun. I can't shoot. My finger was chopped off. The shop accident.
That's what are you mocking me?
Element. I like that. And the Weasel's like a distinguished English gentleman. We don't know why he's called the Weasel.
Yeah, the Weasel is just like, he's like super high class. He's got a vaguely Eastern accent.
Okay, so there we go. So, Brian, you're Do you want to be the shop teacher or?
I should probably be Gary now that I think about it.
All right, so there we go. I do say, Gary, why don't we knock on the door?
Why would we knock on our own door, the weasel? It's well, not like that.
That was the directions we were given to begin this challenge, my friend. Please do tell.
Fine. I will knock on the door, and maybe magically there'll be a case for us.
Come in.
Wait. This is okay. I thought we were in our office, but apparently we're in front of someone else's office.
Well, now I'll try not to act surprised.
Let's go. Let's go, Weasel.
Gary, why are you wearing those protective eyeglasses on again?
Because one can never be too safe.
Then at least clean the paint and sawdust off of them.
No, they're a reminder of what might be. They keep me aware of the menace of paint and sawdust.
Way to think on your feet, Gary. Good sir, what do you say your issue is, and how might we be of service?
I'm sending you over to Eastern Europe to go solve a crime, gentlemen.
I used to summer in Eastern Europe.
Are there foreigners over there?
No, no.
Okay, you promise? I'd say pinky swear, but you'll just remind me that I'm missing the pinky as well.
So that was totally not a shop
Gary,
accident.
I might not have noticed because you were wearing gloves. You're telling me that you are missing both your trigger finger and your pinky.
Yes, the weasel. Do you want to make an issue out of it? You want to make a big deal?
Were they cut off in the same accident, or were they rather separate incidents?
You want to make a carnival sideshow of my tragic past?
I'm just trying to illuminate. We're partners now. We're going to go solve a crime. We're on a flight, by the way. We're on a flight to Eastern Europe.
If you want to illuminate, how about you not do it in front of a client?
Well, this is after the client.
Oh.
I'm actually like your cop, so I'm actually like your boss.
How about not in front of my boss? Because we're cops, not private investigators.
Gary, why don't you go knock on our own door again?
So you show up.
That was
Charity.
A joke.
Yes. All right. Got it.
Charity's like, Polish accent. We have a problem. Money is being ripped off from us.
Money?
Mm-hmm.
Money. Currency.
How much?
Oh, I haven't done a count yet, but it could be a couple hundred Polish dollars.
So we're looking at a minor...
Slotties, I do believe.
Slotties?
Wait, you actually know this because you went to Poland, right?
And I'm an international man of reverence, my friend. Gary, stick with me. We're on my home turf. If we were in some sawdust-laden public institution, then I would say, Gary, why don't you show me the ropes? We're here amongst gentlemen of Europe. Do please follow along.
So about 200 zlotys.
200.
Yeah, and not all at once.
Wait, so somebody's leeching this money?
Yes.
Just sort of sipping away? What business do you run? Where are we? What is this place?
Well, let me get that. First, we've gone through all of our staff and asked them repeatedly, and we've used some Eastern European Soviet interrogation techniques. Of the three that survived, they...
Wait, I'm sorry. It just... I only got three fingers here, so you might need to walk a little slow here. You got to slow things down. Those who survived?
Well, I'm kidding. I mean, they all survived. I just gave them a sharp talking to.
Okay.
And nobody will admit to it.
Nobody will admit to it. How many people are we talking about?
We've got about seven or eight people who work here.
And this is, I'm sorry, I'm not from, we're in
Poland.
But right, that's the, yes. I'm not a Poe, so you'll have to explain to me, what is this your business does?
Well, we're a nonprofit involved with sort of the welfare, animal rights, things like that. Anyhow, what we thought about doing is asking you, you know, what would be the best way to try to catch the culprit?
Sir, you did mention before that this was over 200 zlotys.
Yes. Yes. We.
And over how long a period was this?
It's going on for a couple weeks now.
Weeks, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Ah. We have a long-term crime syndicate afoot, if I'm not mistaken, the weasel.
Allow me to do just a wee bit of math here. We are talking about 200 Polish zlotys, which would be 62 American dollars.
Yes,
this isn't exactly the great train.
You're right.
I do believe that Gary has turned a blind eye to do drug deals in his classroom that amounted to a greater transaction.
Now, hey, listen, big shot Americans. Okay, I don't know if you've looked at the economy here.
I'm just saying. Look, this is obviously a big deal, so they hired the best. They hired the best.
If you can't handle this crime, I'm sorry. You can go. Apologize. I mean, we're sorry. Sorry for bothering you.
No, we can handle it. We can totally handle it. We can handle it. And if you also need a substitute next Thursday, we will still be in the area. When I say we, I mean perhaps the one of us who has a teaching certificate. Hint, it's not the Wheeze.
Don't worry, good sir. We will have this case solved faster than one of Gary's 16-year-old students can get pregnant.
I'm sorry, the weasel. And first of all, why do you make me say the in front of your name? We've known each other for 25 years. Can I just
My name is Theodore T. Weasel.
I just want to say.
The Weasel is my nickname from uni.
Weasel, I've talked to you about this before. We have clients, and when you undermine me in front of the clients, it makes me highly insecure, and it affects my performance. Exactly.
And don't worry, Mr. Gary. I have no less respect for you now than when you walked through the door.
Well, you're lucky. You're lucky, Mr. the Weasel. I'm sorry. Okay. Back to
he
the
He doesn't
nature.
Know what that means, does he, Mr. Weasel? No.
No, he doesn't. I'm afraid, sir, that apparently part of his brain power was cut off when he unceremoniously lopped off his own fingers in a unfortunate accident. Now, you have a situation where several zlotys have gone missing over a six-week period. And what you are involved in, again, is a charity or welfare of some sort. Is that right?
That is correct.
Well, I think it's obvious. Gary, why don't you just go ahead and state what is plainly before us?
Well, if you and I are on the same page, as we often are, Mr. the Weasel, then I'm pretty sure that we've got a case of sexual embezzlement, if you take my meaning.
Ah, and you are saying sexual embezzlement to mean and be quite explicit.
Well, obviously, 62 American dollars is about what it takes to get an HJ around the corner, right? So it's obvious that somebody's been saving up, looking for an opportunity, and splurging to splurge.
To get a Higgs boson jargon.
Exactly. Is that not it?
Do you want to ask any yes or no?
Yes. First of all,
no.
let's get real here for a moment.
Yes.
If you don't mind, gentlemen. You say nonprofit work. Is the nature of this work a sexual establishment?
Indirectly.
Huh.
Is there any animals involved in your practice?
Yes.
Is there animal sexuality on display on any level of your operation?
Not if we can help it, and only between the animals.
Wait a minute. Do you run a zoo?
No.
Wait, but do people pay you to come look at animals?
Not to look at them.
Wait, to touch them?
Wait, is this a petting zoo of some variety?
No. You may pet the animals, but it's not a petting zoo per se.
Wait, Is this an establishment where people come to have
sexual... Stop trying to do the British accent, Gary.
That's another part of Gary's character I forgot to mention. It's like he really wishes he was the weasel. And he, from time to time, slips into trying to do the weasel's accent, but he's clearly unqualified. Are you trying to tell me that this is some kind of factory where people are able to have sexual relations with taxidermical replications of animals?
You're doing definitely it again. Not.
I do what?
You're doing it again, Gary.
I'm sorry.
We spend right a lot of time around it. You. It rubs off.
I'm from Wisconsin. Like Madonna it's very Britain. Difficult.
Now, allow me to help my associate put his finger on the matter. Do you, in your organization, have any kind of illegal past, any kind of run-ins with the authorities in the past prior to now?
No, not that I'm aware of.
That was a terrible job of helping me, the weasel. if you thought that by that question you would eliminate a whole swath of options, then it didn't work.
Oh, well, hold on, sir. Allow me to ask it in the manner for which you would.
Yes.
I'm Gary from Wisconsin. I would like to ask you a question, sir. Now it sounds quite ridiculous when I do it now, doesn't it?
Man, I'll tell you what, man. You're like a chameleon. I never get tired of watching that when you pretend to be me. Like in my mind, I pretend that you just actually slide inside my skin and you hold back a couple
fingers.
All right,
okay.
What?
Why do all of these partnerships always end in very weird homosexual longing?
Yes.
That's a yes-no question. When people come in, do they pay expecting to touch something?
Not necessarily.
They pay.
I've solved the case.
Okay, yes, the weasel.
I do believe that your missing money can be found. Now, I don't know if it will all be there in one piece, but it has not been run off with and spent by scoundrels and brigands. I believe that your money has been et by the animals for which you care for.
No.
Are you sure?
Well, then, Gary, you take a shot.
I would imagine it's a more interesting. I'm still trying to figure out what the heck your company does. I need to zero in on this. Do people? I don't even know how to phrase.
Remember, Gary, measure twice, cut once.
Okay, that's again. If you're going to bring up 86 again, I've got to remind you that that's not professional in front of a client.
That's fine. When it comes to solving crimes, Gary, you're number three.
Okay, again, that's not professional. It's just this needling. You're always doing that. Here's the question. Is there animal testing going on?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
What are you aware of? Why do people come to you? Are you open to the public?
Yes.
And the people come and they pay you. It seems like you don't really know much of...
This is a slaughterhouse. Do you run a slaughterhouse of some sort?
A slaughterhouse?
Not if we can help it.
Okay, again with this ambiguity. This is getting very difficult. I'm down to my last two ideas. Man, I got to tell you, I'm having a tough time. Mr. the Weasel, do you have any... Wait, is this a breeding facility?
No, the opposite.
What, a neutering?
It is a sterilization. It is a veterinary clinic of some sort.
Of a sort.
Yeah, so you guys neuter animals?
Yes.
Like people that bring in their animals, or like you neuter your own animals in some bizarre tournament? Show.
Neutered, you say? Like Gary's confidence okay. After he lost two digits from his right hand.
Yes.
Mr. the Weasel, I can't.
Gary, we're very close.
Yes.
Let's deal with this later.
Yes, I am very close to quitting this team. Okay, so people bring their animals.
It's an animal shelter. It's an animal shelter, okay?
Yeah, all right, all right. And the money's missing.
Along.
just as we suspected.
Just as I have laid out in intricate detail before.
I was
this close. Okay, so 62 bucks.
200 zlotys, okay?
Okay, 200 zlotys was lost?
We had it in our cash box, and bit by bit, gone.
Did it get eaten by one of the animals?
Did not get eaten.
Wait,
Gary, did you stick the two fingers that you've lost of your hands in your ears when I proposed that exact scenario not but 5 minutes prior to now?
Listen, the weasel, there's a lot of things I like about you. And I mean a lot of things I like about you.
Your full digits.
Your 10 fingers.
My jazz fingers.
The fact that you could do a dashing, smashing American accent. But among the things I'm less than fond of are your constant criticisms. let me suggest.
Gary, you're right. That's my fault. And I do say, good sir, I will mellow out like one of your students who leaves class to deliberately get high in full view of the window for which you look out of, almost daring you to do something.
Again, I don't make references in front of our boss to your, say, oh, I'm sorry, look, I'm the weasel. I'll make sure to be incredibly handsome and do everything right all the time. How does it feel when I do it to you, the weasel?
Really,
so good, sir. Slowly, bit by bit, the zlotys were here, and then the zlotys were gone.
Were they smuggling the zlotys out of the animals? I feel like somehow they went in the animals.
No, nobody's going into an animal unless we approve it. All right.
Well, then
now,
the
Gary, let's not bring your wife into this talking about going into the animals.
So this Polish animal shelter noticed that cash was going missing. Money was going missing. They interrogate the staff. They're trying to find out what's going on. Everybody pleads ignorance. So they set up a video camera.
And what did they discover?
I was just about to suggest that.
They see a cat go into the cash box, stealing bills, not eating them. They follow the cat over to a couch, and under the couch, they find several hundred dollars of Polish money.
Are you kidding me?
I suspect the cat was planning an escape. It was trying to get enough money.
Stashing a getaway fund.
Exactly.
It was going to run out with a bribe for the local officials.
Gentlemen, it seems as if we've solved this case of the cat burglar.
The perfect crime.
See, you did it.
That's
you guys,
what I said at the very beginning, by the way.
You're both so good. In fact, I don't know why I'm in this organization with the way you guys make the puns to sum everything up.
To our radio,
I would love
just mating fingers.
I would love a mystery show that always ended with two people making puns and then somebody else trying to very awkwardly fit in.
Somebody who's like hideously deformed from having taught poorly in shop class.
A cat burglar, the perfect crime. You can't catch him.
Yeah, or better yet, he makes a pun, but it's just totally unrelated. Like, I guess she had cat scratch fever, right? And then the money was gone?
Well, I'll tell you what will be in your life if you like good music.
Better
well,
call Dr. Bounty Hunter.
Sorry, go ahead, Justin.
That would be Rachel Higdon's brothers band Midnight Switch. You can go on to Facebook and just search for Midnight Switch. They're a great Kiwi band, and Rachel wanted to give them a big fat shout out. If you want to follow her lead and sponsor this very podcast, we can do your live read right here on the show. Just go to weirdthings.com/sponsor. And thank you to Rachel for helping this episode of Weird Things be a little bit more awesome.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, this week's slate asked a very, very important question.
What happened to the weasel?
No. That is not the question. May I proceed? May I, please?
I was just asking what happened. There's echoes of Gary still in me. It's like it seems like so long since I've seen him.
Can I get to the question, please?
Yes, please.
Man,
ask the question.
This is serious science here, Brian.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Who would win in a fight, a Neanderthal or a human?
Neanderthal.
Really?
So it's just like a physical scrap. Like we're just in, are we talking arena?
I've always thought in my mind that the Neanderthals were the superior species, except for they weren't so good at procreating. Like humans had the moves and they were sneaky, running around having sex with the Neanderthal women, which is why all of us have 1-4% Neanderthal DNA. And is that not the case?
So wait, are we talking about peak, like apex Neanderthal versus apex human, or just like randomly drafted Neanderthal versus randomly drafted human?
Well, let's say peak, you know.
Well, because
man, and Brian,
because also,
you're selling us down the river. You're like Neanderthal.
Hey, buddy, we're all part Neanderthal.
Me for me. I love Neanderthals.
Look, we all got a little Neanderthal DNA up in us, so it's not like it's us versus them. But I'm going to say.
That's fine, Benedict Bryan. Why don't you go over there and see if you can get your 4% into a Neanderthal?
But like people think that Neanderthals were be all big and muscly and humans be all tiny and smart, but that's not the case as I got learned on this show that Neanderthals were smart. They were able to have artistic representations of things. But what was the supposition in The Rational Optimist that the difference was trade, that humans were trading, and that we were able to take other people's ideas from hundreds of miles away, and that's why we were able to win, right?
Yeah, they didn't deal well with strangers.
Right. So it could be. Like that, all of that suggests to me, like if Neanderthals were able to do as well as they did, and they didn't even have the trade thing going for them, like how much smarter and stronger and better must they have been?
Well, the average Neanderthal was about 5'5".
That's bigger than how big was a human back then?
Well, I mean, at that period of time, I know the average human right now is 5'9".
Yeah. We've gotten like way big over the last several thousand years.
We have reach. We'd have like big reach on the Neanderthal, right? So we'd have reach on them, and we also probably had greater stamina. They had strength, but we had stamina.
Yeah.
So you got to do
a fight.
Yeah, man,
I'm saying you put us, you know, Neanderthal and a human in a Colosseum. I got humans all day.
No, nope. See, that's just it, is we didn't win through being better. We didn't win by being stronger, and we didn't win by being smarter. We won by using collective knowledge through free trade. And
Yes. In the grand scheme of evolutionary biology, yes. But like in a fight, you're telling me that we couldn't have taken a Neanderthal?
But we don't. But Brian, we say we didn't win by being smarter. We got to qualify what we mean by smarter, though, because there are different kinds of smarts.
Right. Okay. We'll say like reasoning.
He wasn't they weren't the weasel smart.
That's all right. That exactly. Really. They were more like Gary smart, is what I'm saying. But they spent all their time thinking like, man, Neanderthals are so awesome. They're so handsome. They got that prominent brow.
Like, I think if it were like a judo fight, because Neanderthals had wide pelvises low to the ground, if like it was like, all right, you got to start off with contact, I think Neanderthal would like probably just clean our clock.
Well, I mean,
but if it's like you're getting in, you're just throwing some punches and stuff and keeping at, and you got stamina. Remember, We have bigger. We have like humans have like the best stamina of like any animal there is.
Okay, so I'll say this much. First of all, whatever wins in just one fight, it's hard to make that count because there's so much variance in humanity. Like picture picking any random two humans and pitting them, that doesn't really say anything about. I mean, just about anything.
No,
right?
That's what I was saying. Apex. That's why I asked Apex versus random. Because if it was just a random thing, I would say, yeah, probably on average, maybe. Neanderthal would have the strength advantage and you just wouldn't be able to overcome that. But if you're going apex Neanderthal versus apex human, I feel like
what does that mean? Because then you're cheating because if you're able to go apex, then you're able to take a random ass Neanderthal versus somebody who's super skilled in the art of kung fu. It's like how do you divorce the
greatest
knowledge?
Neanderthal warrior of all time versus
Bruce
our
Lee.
Greatest human physical specimen.
Bruce Lee. But Bruce Lee knows things that Neanderthal can't know. That's why
because of his superior intellect, Brian.
No, well, no, superior. But, right, but it's not even.
But your point is that they were awesome at being stronger and smarter in combat situations.
In
so let's
general,
say the greatest of all time, the Neanderthal that killed the most, ruthless efficiency. At what they did, or at least what the relative to the entire history of the Neanderthal race, that dude versus or lady versus the ultimate human killing machine.
But that's the whole problem is that the ultimate human killing machine is doing so based on generations of killing knowledge that has been passed down through effective communication and idea exchange, which none of which the Neanderthals get the benefit of. If we're talking about, I mean, I guess to make this fair, you'd have to kind of do some kind of mind wipe or something. If we're talking about just physically.
Never. All right. And we'll follow your rabbit hole. But I hope that the check's clear from the Neanderthal super PAC that's higher.
No, okay. So here's the thing. If you say the apex, the problem is that humanity has excelled so far beyond the Neanderthals that there's no
we rock.
There's no comparison. You could take just about one of the three of us, and what idiocy we know from having watched action movies would probably be able to take out a Neanderthal in an arena
situation.
I wouldn't
put money on any of us.
All right. Well,
I'm dead.
I'll say
something like I try to think of something clever before I die, though.
I would say that you'd be better off comparing a human of that era to a Neanderthal of that era. I think this apex setup is bad news.
I like the idea of Brian taking us and putting us with our TV knowledge of martial arts versus, you know.
First thing we do is try to appear larger. We're just like,
Unfortunately, despite whatever martial arts experiences we may have, I know we've all probably spent a lot more time watching professional wrestling, which may impress the Neanderthal.
Dude, we start flopping around. We do flips and then land on our back. We're like, oh.
No, dude, I would just cut a crazy promo right in his face. Neanderthal! I'll tell you what! This Sunday, Miami Arena, you're going down over the top rope!
I'm going to take your monobrow, Ugg, and tie it behind your back!
You're like, it does not matter what the Neanderthal thinks! You were extinct 20 million years ago! 20,000 years ago. How long ago?
If you smell what the dominant species has evolved to.
Oh, wait. Do you have fire? So sorry. They did.
Yeah, they had fire. I was about to say. That's Neanderthal.
We're exaggerating, Brian.
Yeah. All right. So I don't know. Where do you come down on it? I mean, I guess you know the answer. What does your gut tell you, though, Andrew?
I think that... you know, the average, if we figure, you know, yeah, it's hard to figure out, like, what is the average? What's the median? Even within a group of, let's say, like, you know, 80 or so Homo sapiens at that point, they're going to be much more athletic than probably us, that's for sure. And there's going to have been some, you know, Darwinian things going on as far as, you know, child infant mortality, whatever. So they're going to be on average stronger than us. Much more stamina than we have. And I guess, you know, having been in similar environments as Neanderthals, if we compare somebody back then, I think that, you know, each one would learn how to fight to their own advantages. And, you know, one of the things that we, and I've said this before, and it kind of gets forgotten, is human beings have incredible amounts of stamina. We can, over a distance, outrun a horse. Not me personally. Maybe Brian when he's in the middle of training or something, or Justin when he's on his jogging kick, but a human can outrun a horse over distance, and we can tire out a lot of animals. And that's one of the ways in which we would hunt, is we would just get up and start running and chasing these things down. And then finally these big beasts would be like, have heart attacks and fall over.
Yeah. But do you think the battle,
I think a great Nike ad, by the way,
do you think the battle would really go for like days to the point? I mean, it seems like they would be decided way earlier.
It's a boxing match. You know, big, powerful fighters often tire very early. You had a guy like Muhammad Ali, who, you know, was a faster guy with a lot of stamina, and arguably probably one of the greatest fighters ever.
Yeah.
And some of our biggest, best fighters.
George Foreman.
Yeah.
What's that?
Rope-a-dope told George Foreman.
Exactly. Some of our greatest fighters generally have been guys who have been, you know, not the bulkiest or the strongest, but sometimes more compact, more sleek, and have maybe reach advantages and other advantages. So I don't know. I really don't know.
I'll tell you what. I put up Tom Hardy from Warrior. That dude is a beast.
I put up, Tom Hardy. Wasn't that the name of Bane?
Yeah. You ever see that movie he was in, Warrior? MMA movie?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll put him as Bane against him. Are we picking incarnations of Tom Hardy to pit against
him? Are we going to do a tournament? The tournament,
yes,
of Hardys?
Of all Tom Hardys. Yes, exactly.
And then the guy from Inception comes in.
Right.
Dude, Eames is going out first round. Eames doesn't make it past.
They're being accepted.
Oh, wait. What if he did? What if he put in the idea, like, you know what would be awesome is failing at this tournament, and he got into their dreams.
So, all right. So you're saying, all right, Eames versus Charlie Bronson, first round. You think, I mean, I don't know. Charlie Bronson's, I don't know if I want to get into Charlie Bronson's dreams.
I don't know if Charlie Bronson knows the difference between a dream state and reality.
Yeah.
I've got nothing.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. If you would like to make your suggestions for first round matchups for the tournament of Hardys, please.
It's a case of cat scratch fever. Come on, I got the right animal.
That was great. It was very well done.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to remind you that The Dolls of Lisbon is on DVD and available for download. 100 handmade dolls shipped around the world. Arts and crafts meets subversion. It's a DIY eyeball-busting bonanza. Film Threat gave it 3.5 stars. So go on, find it via Google. You know, go to Amazon, type it up. The Dolls of Lisbon, available now. For DVD and download, whatever you choose. Thank you to Ethan Minsker, who bought that ad read.
Very cool. I love the idea that, you know, we're getting people doing some alternative culture kind of stuff, film stuff, all that, bands. That's great. I think our audience is...
I love the fact that there exists art that is so out there that the first place they think to spend their money is to advertise it on weird things.
I think it's awesome. I love the fact that we can be a poster board for which these kind of things get put up for everybody to listen to and read and watch.
Very cool. So I'm reading this, checking this out on film. It looks very interesting. Gentlemen.
Sup?
Got one more story for you.
Go ahead.
Good.
I mean, I got a billion stories, but.
I actually, if we want to get another perspective, I have someone here in the studio with me who might be able to offer. I feel like
a Neanderthal?
Well, no. Don't
who,
let her
would
hear
she
you.
Would she beat a Neanderthal?
Oh, she would beat a Neanderthal for sure. But I'll tell you what, we've never.
Can I thank her for laughing at my Nike joke on Nike?
I'm just saying what we should have is the perspective of a human being currently engaged with a large symbiote inside her belly.
Sure. Are you going to introduce it?
No, apparently not. Apparently, hold on. There we go. All right, go ahead.
I never saw him turn the mic on, so
I didn't turn the mic on because you were all acting like you didn't want to have the mic on. But then I decided I was going to bring you in.
Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, I'm pregnant and tired.
Hi.
I'll tell you what, that's the kind of high energy introduction we're looking for here on the Weird Things Podcast.
All right, we're going to, Bonnie, we're going to play a lightning round, and you're critical to this, all right?
All right, this is good.
Okay. Yes.
All right, I'm going to give you initials of a man, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you, his initials are JK, and it's going to be a question of what made this guy special. And I'm going to give you the day he died. But if you want to start going, what makes this guy special? You can start asking me yes or no questions.
Okay.
Is he dead? Oh, sorry, you already said.
Is he dead today? Was he also dead?
He died in 1973.
Will he be dead tomorrow?
Was he involved in
I'm
politics?
Sorry, that is incorrect. That is not when he died. Let me, I was trying
was
to pull
his
up
his name
a,
Joey Knowledgeman.
Is there a Jerry Knowles or something like that?
Jerry Knowledgeman.
Hi, it's me, four-time spelling bee champ Joey Knowledgeman.
He says spelling bee?
He probably died, I think, in the 1950s, late 1950s.
It was, my first question, was it Joey Knowledgeman?
Oh, go right. Come on, Brian. You're wasting.
Okay.
Did he, wait, did he die in the 70s or in the 50s?
50s.
He died, I believed, in the 50s.
Oh, 50s. Okay. Did he have a remarkable memory?
Not a super exceptional memory that, what, to my
did
knowledge.
He have, did he have a beautiful mind? Sub question.
He did. His memory was very good up until he died, though. I'll say that.
All right. Was he,
if he didn't have a beautiful mind, do you think he would enjoy the film A Beautiful Mind starring?
Was, I'm just going to skip right over that. Did he have a remarkable talent of some variety? Something
no.
that would be, really? Wait, no. You said no?
Well, did he die a rich man?
Not that I'm aware of.
Was it John F. Kennedy?
No.
You sure? You might want to double check that. He died sometime close to that time.
Oh, okay. Did he live a long life? Did he live longer than the average life expectancy?
Yes.
Wait. Is that did he is live that over 150 was... 20 years? 120 years?
No.
110 years.
No, I don't believe so.
100 years.
Okay. Was he, did he witness something very extraordinary?
Yes.
Oh, wait. Hold on. Hey.
I think this has to do with something in astronomy.
In astronomy?
Yeah.
Was this a guy who saw, like, an astronomical event of significance?
No.
Oh.
Hold on, buddy. Maybe he's just misinterpreting. Oh, let me go to bat for you. Are you sure? Because, like, Hallie's comment counts as astronomical.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if he saw that, but it wasn't significant that he saw it.
Did he start a school for gifted mutants?
Yes, but it has nothing to do with this.
Did he witness something that we would consider to be violent?
Yes.
Did he witness something that changed the course of American history?
Yes.
Did he used to own a black person?
All right, Brian.
I'm just saying, this got Civil War vet written all over it. Did he live to see the Civil War?
I do believe I know what our friend is known for.
Really? Okay. Well, are you gonna recuse yourself or go for it?
Oh, if you're going to give me the option of letting you dangle, yes, I'll shut up.
No, I'll keep going. Like, did he have something to do with the Civil War?
He was alive during part of it.
Did he fight in it, participate in any way?
No.
Gold Rush?
No.
Assassination of Lincoln?
Yeah.
What? Oh, my
when
God.
When Mr. Samuel James Seymour was 5 years old. His godmother said, you know what, Sammy, you need some culture. I'm going to take you to a play. He didn't want to go see Our American Cousin,
no.
but she decided he should see it anyways. Five-year-old Sammy J. Seymour was in the balcony the night Lincoln got shot.
Was that what you were going to say, Justin?
It was, because as soon as we were going through this, I had seen a clip that started circulating last week of him on, To Tell the Truth, or no, I've Got a Secret.
He's on video from 1956 on I've Got a Secret, and that was his secret, that he saw Abraham Lincoln getting shot.
Oh my God.
And by the way, like that's an amazing thing. And like that headline makes you watch the clip, but the clip itself is so anticlimactic because like the people there get it in like three guesses. Was it political? Yes. Was it violent? Yes. Did you watch Lincoln get shot?
Yeah. So, okay, what would that have been in 1956? That would have been, what, 70 years after the fact, right? So that would be roughly the equivalent of...
No, I was 90 years after the fact.
Yeah.
90 years after the fact?
He was five.
And he's 90, very, very 95 frail. At that point?
And he
so what is would, what
offered
would this be?
Or is given a carton of cigarettes at the end.
Okay, so what would the equivalent... event be for someone nowadays? You got a 95-year-old guy on television, and they say, so that would have been what, 1917?
Titanic?
Yeah. He's on To Tell the Truth.
No, that'd be more, right? Because, Titanic was 19 what?
12.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that would be 100 years. So he, I guess it would be even more recent than the Titanic. He was like, I watched The Grapes of Wrath get written. Yes. I actually don't know when that happened.
Well, and what makes it kind of fascinating is the idea that you have a guy that witnessed an event when photography was relatively new.
Yeah.
You know, amazing historical event. The country's less than 100 years old, living long enough to tell that story on television. It can then end up on YouTube, so you can watch a guy that was in Ford's Theater the night Lincoln was shot.
It's amazing.
That's an amazing thought.
So
it's just these different periods of history, which seem so separated, but this bridge, you know, of TV in the 1950s to YouTube.
So
I guess maybe somebody who saw like Archduke Franz Ferdinand get shot.
Yeah.
That'd be a good one.
Good one.
Yeah. So they had reality TV in the 50s?
Apparently. I mean, they
no,
called them
it was,
game
yeah,
shows
it was a quiz show.
It's a game show, yeah. Yeah, where they'd have someone go on who has a secret and they'd investigate and figure out what.
Where, by the way, everybody was smoking constantly.
Yes.
That's my favorite part of old television.
Funny.
It's
and
just like ashtrays
somewhere.
Everywhere. It's like, yeah, we're filming a show, whatever. Blowing butts.
Man, I want to bring that back. Can we all start smoking on weird
Philip Morris presents the Children's Cartoon Hour.
It's so disgusting. Like, I look at people who are old with their teeth, and you just know immediately if they're smokers. And I'm like, I'm so
well,
glad.
No, but like Mad Men, they all smoke, like, herbal cigarettes or whatever. That, like,
I heard
real.
A great example. You know where Mad Men is alive and well? China.
Oh, sure. Yeah. the misogyny.
But he's like oh, my God. I love watching Mad Men because it transports me back to a period that I so long for. China, bro. It's happening right now. The future's real.
Right. Oh. I think no, we
anyhow, same Samuel James Seymour, so check it out. So.
That should be, by the way, China, where the past comes alive.
Do we have any other reads?
We certainly do. Andrew Dale says, Movember, please support this great a worldwide male awareness charity. Please go ahead and visit http://mobro.co/AndyJDale or just at the abductee on Twitter to see Andy sporting a popular Weird Things podcast character's mustache. So of course, Movember, if you're not familiar, it's the month where you are suggested to wear a man's mustache to raise, I forget what exactly the cause
awareness.
Of
well, I mean, unfortunately, sadly, it would be to raise awareness for cancer, which apparently hasn't worked out so well.
It's testicular cancer, right?
I actually don't know that about.
I believe that's what it is. Anyway, so go to mobro.co/AndyJDale and visit @theabductee, which, I mean, I love the fact that there is somebody who wants to spend their own hard-earned money to get the word out, to spread the good news on an amazing charity, and their Twitter handle is @theabductee.
Amazing.
Gentlemen, I think it's time we do picks. I'm going to go up front with a short one because I think we're going to have a longer discussion.
Yeah.
So my quick pick, if you're looking for a good audiobook or book to read, Penny Marshall, My Mother is Nuts. Penny Marshall, you may remember her as Laverne from Laverne and Shirley. Mm-hmm. And very much enjoyed it. Very funny. I think I mentioned before she did some smodcasts with Kevin Smith on the Movie Maker podcast.
I'll tell you what. I, like you, came to those long after the fact. Like, I saw them in the feed, and it was one of those things I'll get around to doing. And I just dove in, and they were amazing. It just sounds like a different time, a different era, where everything is just there, and nobody knows the value of having a nationwide audience at the time. And that just, you know, deciding I don't feel like doing stenography, so I guess I'll become a famous international personality. And then like now I guess I'll be the first female director to direct a movie that grosses over $100 million. It's just this nonchalance about it that's amazing and inspiring.
She's got a great perspective, and you know, if any of you ever watch Laverne and Shirley growing up or watching reruns or whatever, you know what, how great comedically she was. You know, she's very much, you know, that was a show that was sort of modeled in the Lucille Ball sort of comedy, you know, 20 years later or so, but very enjoyable. I absolutely, she's got great stories, got a great perspective. She's a person that's been involved in the careers of so many other people. There's another Smodcast with interviews with John Lovitz of Saturday Night Live. And you find out about how many people ended up on Saturday Night Live or because Lorne Michaels asked Penny Marshall, what do you think about so-and-so? So she's like, oh, yeah, I like him. He's a nice guy staying in my house. You know, and she's one of these people in L.A. has had this house where the number of famous people that have slept on her couch and lived there. Richard Dreyfuss spent, you know, was, you know, she has in her autobiography tells a story about how when she and Rob Reiner were breaking up, they took 6 months longer to do it because Richard Dreyfuss wouldn't stop crying. He was living there and didn't like the idea that they were going to break apart. Albert Brooks would like spent 3 months on their couch doing nothing. And it was just this very interesting, you know, this person who's right in the middle of everything, not by trying hard to be the center, but, you know, her brother was Gary Marshall. And, you know, when she was decided to go out to L.A. and she gets these jobs first in, you know, acting roles where it'd say like, Homely Girl says, you know, and yeah, you know, she'd read that in a script and just, you know, tear her apart. But she just kept at it, and she's just so likable. So it's on Audible, My Mother is Nuts by Penny Marshall.
Did you read it?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and actually, awesome. I would say like an additional plug. If you're not sure if you're going to like the book and you want to essentially get a piece of the character for free, definitely, definitely listen to the Smoothie Makers episodes with her and Kevin Smith. Kevin Smith, I think, is extraordinarily undervalued as an interviewer. He has a really good job of matching the personality you know, the beats of the person that he's dealing with. And he brought to life the story of Penny Marshall in a way that I never thought that I would experience, and certainly has made me interested in the story as well.
I was listening to those episodes, the three episodes. I listened to them on the way back down from Orlando, and I said, I want to hear more of her stories. I love showbiz stories. I don't read magic books. I read like showbiz books. And, you know, this is, you know, great example of, you know, the kind of stuff I love to hear. Brian, do you want to go with your pick?
Yeah. You remember like last week or 2 weeks ago, because we took a week off, which, by the way, I'm sorry, on behalf of all three of us, if it were up to us, circumstances would never have made that a situation. But you remember I was reading Steven Pinker's The Better Angels of Our Nature?
Yes.
And I liked it a lot. Of the trifecta between The Rational Optimist, Abundance, and this book, while probably made the most compelling case, made me the saddest, because there's no way to tell the story about how much better we are as a society now, how much less violent we are as a society now without graphically describing what life was like 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 500 years ago. And when you have vivid descriptions of what it means to be broken on the wheel, which if you didn't know, and I didn't know, that means they one of the tortures they would do is they'd throw somebody on a wagon wheel. They'd break their arms in enough pieces that they could weave the destroyed flesh hands through the spokes of the wheel. And then people would, for their amusement, go and look at the. I mean, it just made me sad. I mean, in which is bizarre for what should be a very inspiring message. Was the graphic depictions just really bummed me out. So I'm gonna write that one down as a very important book. And after you've read The Rational Optimist and after you've read Abundance, you should definitely read this, because you need. It's important to realize that something magical in the entire history of mankind is happening right now. And he even talks about how difficult it is for scientists to not want to describe what's happening in the last several hundred years as something divine, or you know, something to ascribe almost a religious meaning to the fact that we've become so much less violent. But it's inspiring in many regards. But man, you have to hear some horrific descriptions of what people did for grins back in the old days. There was things like people would crowd into a theater to watch a cat be lowered on a brazier into a burning bonfire so that they could laugh at the way it would freak out and eventually get burned alive. I mean, it was rough. But
man, life before cable TV.
Exactly, right? And so he gives very good reasons, very compelling arguments for why things have changed. It's way good. But now I'm reading, I believe it's Kahneman is the author of the book, Thinking Fast and Slow. And this came to us over Twitter from Uber Moogle. I don't know if you remember, but a couple weeks ago, I was talking about how weird it is that there are things I can do with different parts of my body. Like the happiest I am is when I'm at the gym working out on the elliptical because my body's doing something, and I'm listening to an audiobook while also playing this video game Drop 7 that involves manipulating colors and numbers to make basically stay alive as long as you can. And Uber Moogle sent a tweet saying that that's essentially what thinking fast and slow is all about. And thinking fast and slow has been really good, the first part. The overall thesis is that you essentially have kind of two systems running your brain. And as much as we like to think of ourselves as, oh, I'm the person in charge of this ship and there's a single me, very clearly through a number of exercises, he sets up a number of problems where you think about it two different ways. You think about what your gut tells you, and it's a very consistent result. And you think about what we think of as our rational mind takes you through, and you realize how many of the very important decisions we make day to day are made by this intuitive system where there's no conscious rational thought whatsoever. It's as though we have two warring personalities in our mind, and one of them is just not even able to handle important computations. And I'm really enjoying it, really looking forward to seeing where it goes with it. But thinking fast and slow, I'm enjoying it a lot.
Cool. My pick is the film Cloud Atlas, directed by Tryker and then the Wachowski siblings. I don't say no one, but I was very, very cynical about this movie going into it from the first trailer.
Were you ever? In the movie, I don't know how much of that was gamesmanship, but you were not shy during the winter movie draft about how poorly this movie would do. And for the record, you were right, and I'm sad I bought it.
Yeah, well, I still didn't think it was going to make any money. I mean, no matter what I thought of the film as artistically, you know. But I saw it today on the recommendation. I had a conversation with Andrew on Sunday, and I went to go see it today before the podcast. And I have to say, It was really, really awesome to see a good Wachowski siblings movie. Like, it was like it was a movie that I had been waiting, I think, to a large extent, kind of, we have all been waiting for since the first Matrix. And that's not to say that it has anything to do with the Matrix or even hits many of the same notes as the Matrix. Although you could say that, you know, thematically, it's a movie that, you know, makes a lot of big points or has these big symbolic kind of elements that may or may not be, you know, the smartest things in the world. But it's super competently told. The action's fantastic. And let me just say this. I love the sound design on the laser guns. That, I think that was like my favorite part of the movie, was that, like, you know, because we've tended to go to these very almost realistic laser gun sounds in movies because nobody wants to do like the pew pew. But they have like an awesome sound. I don't know why it stuck with me, but for some reason.
I like the lasers too. The way there was different than kind of like the way they were, was kind of like a mixture of like sparkles or something. And, you know.
Yeah. But it had like this semi-automatic fire element mm-hmm. to it. That was really cool. To summarize the movie, it would be impossible. It's just, it's all these crazy moving parts. In full disclosure, I haven't read the book. I don't know how it stacks up to the book. I know some people that read the book were a little upset that some of the recurring actors, including Hugo Weaving and Halle Berry and Tom Hanks, don't play the same characters as they move through through time and history, I guess, compared to the books. So I can't speak to that. I can speak to the fact that, like, I forgot just how much I thought of the Wachowskis as this kind of this lost cause, that they were just, you know, they made the Matrix and the Matrix was a fluke and they were just going to keep making really dumb movies forever. And, you know, I was happy. It was one of those things where, like, I felt like I saw an old friend again.
I saw it Friday with my dad. And when I saw the trailers, I remember going, I was cynical because it just looked like it was going to be an all over the kind of play story. I didn't have a lot of confidence. I mean, remember the last Wachowski film that they directed was Speed Racer. Mm-hmm. And then before that, they had, you know, the two Matrix sequels, which I'm not too high up on. But I went into it with, you know, kind of no expectation other than, you know, at very least I'll get to watch, you know, Hanks and Halle Berry and all of them play the different characters and just to see how they did it. And technically, I thought they did a great job. I mean, they're like six different storylines or multiple storylines that are woven together that were done. I was interested in every single one. I was very, very interested in the characters and the outcome. And it's not necessarily like I use Whale Rider as an example. Whale Rider, I thought it was a great film. I don't really believe in that mythology. I don't really believe the whales are these magical creatures, et cetera. But in the context of the story, I liked it. I very much enjoyed Whale Rider. It's a religious film, just like The Passion. But, you know, each one in their own sort of, you know, environments work. And that's what I thought about this, is that I don't think the movie is really that deep, you know, as perhaps the Wachowskis feel that it is. But it's every bit or more passionate than
yeah,
that.
But,
and
but
that's all that
the,
I want to see.
But The Matrix had the same thing to it,
yeah,
where, you know,
and
some,
the Matrix
some
fell apart
into
in the
and you
sequels.
Could make the argument that they believed the Matrix was a very, very deep message, when, you know, that's not exactly why people loved it.
And the sequels fell apart when they tried to just put too much of it upon that sort of thing, where this was just this, hey, this is, you know, it's like a love song, that somebody's going to tell you a story or a music video about love or humanity and whatever, And it's a perspective, but I thought it was a well-crafted story. I'm very interested. I saw it once. I look forward to seeing it again. It's not for everybody. And the way they took what I would think would be an unfilmable story and tied it all together with the beginning, middle, and the end, the audience I was with very much loved it, enjoyed it, applauded at certain points. And this is a mainstream audience. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to do great theatrically, but I do think it's going to be a movie that's going to grow with time and people are going to really appreciate it.
Yeah, and
so I am somebody who's very criticism averse. Like, if I'm kind of thinking about seeing something, it only takes one person to tell me that it sucked, and I'm like, well, I don't know that I want to risk 3 hours looking at something that I'm not going to love. And Tom Merritt sort of bummed me out by saying it was almost a great movie, and instead, like, he didn't say what it was. Like, he just felt like it was incomplete, and it fell short of of the things. The other iteration I heard was the trailer, of course, at over 5 minutes long, was like an epic trailer selling the movie, but the movie itself plays like an epic trailer selling something that you don't quite get to see.
I don't know if I would agree with the second thing. I mean, that fast talking, gum snapping Hollywood Tom Merritt's.
Yeah,
criticism.
Hollywood Tom Merritt, as we call him on Frame Rate.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I would guess. I mean, like, he has a different perspective because he read the book. He just read the book recently for Sword and Laser. So I don't know how much of that factors into how we would look at the movie. Having now read the book, I always, especially when you're talking about movies relative to other films, I always kind of take the gymnastics judging kind of approach to it. How much risk did you take in your inherent premise, and then how well did you execute on it?
So you know, get so points for difficulty, basically.
Yeah, a movie like Inception, a $200 million action thing with a premise that's going to be incredibly hard for a mass audience to understand and is deliberately obscured. That's a tremendous risk executed on brilliantly, which is why Inception is probably my favorite Christopher Nolan movie. This movie, there's a lot of stuff that is not even for like sci-fi people. Like, you know, that one of the things is set, you know, and I don't know if it's a spoiler to say when in time it is set, but like
if you've seen the trailers, it looks like you've got colonial era stuff. It looks like you got 1970s. It looks like
okay,
you got
but there's
some in
there's
the
like some far sci-fi stuff that's like challenging to understand what they're saying, you know, like to the point where they want to build this world and you know, build this kind of universe in a very literary kind of way, and I think they do it successfully in the context of this larger story.
I would add too that I think that there are some science fiction movies that when they come out, you know, they I'd say they're misjudged, but they're judged within that sort of frame of time, and then afterward. And sometimes, and I don't know that Cloud Atlas will be one of them, but it could be. You take Blade Runner. When Blade Runner came out, it, box office failure. It was considered, you know, the flaws were very evident in that film, so much so that people didn't see how much was amazing about that film. And it's one of those things that as time's grown on, Blade Runner is one of the most beloved science fiction films, and people still get into that going, nah, I didn't like it, I didn't this, and then sometimes it grows on people, sometimes it doesn't, but, you know, they keep bringing it out because Blade Runner is an amazing film, flaws and all, and I think that, you know, that may be the case. You know, Cloud Atlas may be a movie that gets forgotten, or maybe a film that, you know, when you look at the idea, the narrative structure of, you know, those six stories, which is a literary structure that's done a lot in literary, you know, in books.
This is... what you're doing is brilliant because you guys just reframed this entire thing to me. This is not a risky proposal in which I may lose 3 hours of my time and get a crappy movie in return. This is a risky proposal in that if I don't see this, I may be that asshole who missed out on seeing a 2001 while it was in theaters or a Blade Runner.
And, you know, in context, Brian, I've been watching 2001, you know, every night before I go to sleep, and I keep falling asleep watching it.
Really?
And I love
because
Kubrick.
Keep in mind, like, I no lie, I before I finally sat through all of Blade Runner conscious, I fell asleep to it six times before actually finishing the entire movie.
Yeah, I've watched 2001 dozens of times. I'm a big Kubrick fan. I've got books on it, but you know, I'm sitting back and I'm like, oh, I haven't watched that movie in probably 3 or 4 years. Let me sit down and watch it. And it's the point where I'm kind of tired at night, but it's that kind of because of the pacing of that movie, I keep zoning out. Doesn't mean it's not a great film. I think it is, but you know, I'm so used to what makes it great now and this and that, and you know, can point out, oh, this is the significance of Moonwatcher and all these little points, though. But it becomes sort of a background noise almost to a point.
Real quick, if you want 2001 to be background noise, and I don't know if Justin will disagree with me on this, but check out Bowie2001.com. It's pieces of 2001 chopped up with remixes of David Bowie songs, and it does everything out of order, and it's got each song has its own little texture. And I've watched it several times. I may at this point have watched it more than I watched the original 2001. I like it quite a bit.
So, but yeah, I think that was a good point bringing that up. And again, I'm not saying, you know, it's time is the only thing that will tell us what happens with this. And I walked out of there enjoying it and hoping for, gosh, I hope there is an extended version because I would love to watch this several nights in a row, which is, you know, not a fault of the filmmakers. It's a fault of the medium itself that, you know, if you start going past, you know, it's like 2 hours, 44 minutes. Once you hit that 3 hour mark,
it's long. I mean, yeah. It's
I enjoyed every
there's,
minute
there's
of it,
a point in which you kind of the story has kind of hit a little bit of a crescendo. And then you realize that it's just a kind of another gear shifting for now, the final kind of, you know, dominoes to fall that I kind of felt a little bit of the length. But that being said, I mean, if you like the idea of, I mean, if you, you know, are a storyteller yourself, if you enjoy storytelling, I think this is, I mean, it really is an achievement. And you know, to get back to kind of the promise of the Wachowskis, you know, that, you know, that I don't know if expectations have really ever been higher after a first film than you know, the Wachowskis were after The Matrix. But,
well,
you know,
Bound,
people but... looked at them. What was that?
Bound was their first film.
Okay. Well, then.
After their first big hit, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. But I mean, like, people didn't look at them as just good directors. They looked at them as like directors of their age, you know? And I think that was kind of what, and be it media, you know, contrived. I believe that was what kind of people looked at them as. And this was the first time that I watched a movie of theirs and said, like, oh, that's why we thought that about those guys.
Well, and it was, I mean, that was the major thing was because Bound was an art house film that was a very, very popular film, very good film. And then they went from Bound to doing Matrix, which was this popcorn flick. And they went from art house to popcorn flick. Then all of a sudden, boom, they blew up. And, you know, what went from art house favorites to there. And then, you know, as you point out, after that, it was like, oh, you know, is that all they got? But I would say that this is a very interesting melding of, you know, those two universes.
Yeah. So great stuff. Cloud Atlas. You know, I'm curious to see, you know, people comment on the post here on Weird Things when it goes up to see what the point of view of people is, people are who read the book. But, you know, as just a movie, like, and again, I was all too excited to poop on this film. And by poop on it, I mean not see it and just make fun of it. But I was blown away. I was suckered. I fell for the power of love here in Cloud Atlas. It was great stuff.
Just the Rotten Tomatoes, the audience score is 77% right now.
Fresh.
Yep, which is good. The Tomatometer for critics is 63. And you look at the critics
by the way, to put that in perspective, keep in mind, at the time of release, Fight Club was 65% and was certified as rotten at the time. And only after, like years after Fight Club, if you go now, it'll show it as much, much more positive as more reviews come out seeing it in context for its time. Like, to me, like, weirdly, those are the movies I'm most excited to see are the ones that are right on the edge, that polarize audiences, that are uncomfortable enough that they push a lot of people to say negative things about it.
Totally agree.
Yeah, man. Cloud Atlas. Go get it in your life.
Well, gentlemen, it's been weird.
You want to sponsor the podcast? Do you have $30? If so, go to weirdthings.com/sponsor and you can have Justin say whatever you want. He's a trained ape.